You're listening to Raphael Epstein.
Ever since Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, the reboot, I have loved watching Tom Hardy. He's not always good. He's in Locke. His name in the film is Ivan Locke. Josh Nelson joins us to talk about this and other single actor films. His blog is filmology.com, spelt with a PH. Josh, welcome.
Good afternoon.
Are you a Tom Hardy fan, by the way?
Oh, very much so.
Okay, good. We're on common ground there. What else has he done, actually? Can't think.
Warrior, which screened again this week on television with Nick Nolte and Joel Edgerton, who we talked about last week. One of the great, all-time great fighting films that I think slipped under a lot of people's radar.
Tinker Taylor, he's the bad guy in the latest Batman film.
Bronson.
Bronson
was the film that shot him to fame. And he's also the new Mad Max, which comes out next year.
Oh, that's right. Okay, so he's interesting. Look, I've got a little piece of the film. We are going to give you the basic premise, but it's not spoiling too much of the film. But just before we play you a part of the film, give people the basic setup, John.
Well, let's start with the actual idea of the film, because it is Tom Hardy in a car answering phone calls for 85 minutes, which may not sound all that dramatic or appealing, but it really is. And at the beginning of the film, when he hops in his car, we discover very early on that Tom Hardy, Ivan Locke, is a construction manager on the eve of an historic concrete pour. But rather than attending to that or attending to his family, he's deciding to drive to London to go to the hospital where a woman who he's had a one-night stand with is about to give birth to his child.
Have you even told your wife that someone's having your baby?
I'm about to do that. I have a list of things that I have to do tonight while I'm driving.
So am I on a list?
Yes, tonight, yes.
Do you love me?
Oh, it's so hard to even listen back to. It's hard to listen back to. We should give people a bit more of an idea. There are lots of voices on the phones, and I think the way they filmed that, they filmed this in real time, didn't they?
And put a few of the cuts together.
So they have people, presumably in a room somewhere, actually calling in to Tom Hardy on the phone.
If he's performing without that as a kind of support net, it's an even more remarkable performance. So what is, I think, pretty remarkable as it stands, and I think a lot of the success of this film rests on his performance. I think there's probably not too many actors who could have pulled this off, because the camera really doesn't leave the car. We get very few high angle shots of the car on the motorway. There's lots of play with focus, which I think is sort of a way of the filmmaker trying to express his internal tension, where we get the shots through the windscreen where the lights of the oncoming traffic just sort of start to blur, and his whole world is a kind of a blur at that
point. He's got a cold too, so he's blowing his nose and drinking coffee. I mean, this is a guy, he's trying to keep the lid on severe personal crisis.
And we understand from his character, and this is something that the film develops, that this is a guy who's a bit of a control freak. Mm. And, you know, the fact that he's renowned for his concrete pouring and all this emphasis on foundations, while the foundations of his life, like his family, his job, are kind of crumbling at the same time. I like this film, the way in which it draws drama pretty much just from the personal conversations and the way in which they develop, the phone calls that come in and out and increase in frequency over the course of the film. I think a lesser screenwriter or director would have tried to take some cheap shots, like he knocks a paperboy off his bike, or you know, he gets pulled over, or a tire blows out.
No relief, is there?
Yeah, the filmmaker keeps the action in the car at all times. And one of the strengths of Hardy's performance, given that he's renowned for doing these pretty crazy violent roles, is to keep a lid on it. So you see the simmering, you see this guy who's so together, you see the cracks forming, but he only ever really breaks it when he talks to the sort of the spectral presence of his father in the backseat. We never see the father. And that, again, could have come off a bit like Clint Eastwood talking to a chair at the political conference.
Yeah, right. But no, it works really well.
It does. It works really well. And I like that. It's interesting, too, that the director of this film, Stephen Knight, has a background in script writing. And this feels like a script writing film. Very theatrical.
He wrote it and directed it, didn't he?
Yeah. And he wrote the script for Eastern Promises, the Cronenberg film. And one of the kind of key, I guess we could call it a MacGuffin, if you want to use a filmic term, in that film is the newborn child. And in Eastern Promises, you know, will the Russian mob get it? Will Naomi Watts, you know, take control of it? And here, this is a whole film really about, well, a soon-to-be-born child as well. That sort of structures the narrative. So he clearly has an interest in that as a symbol, I guess. But
thought it was kind of like watching someone stop themselves having a panic attack. Like if you've ever suffered that sort of pain yourself or know someone who has, this is a man who is just on the edge of completely losing physical control because of emotional trauma.
And that's why the car works as such a nice kind of play with that, because on the one hand, it's his protective barrier between where he's coming from and where and the fate that awaits him, but it's also incredibly claustrophobic. Like, his world has closed in on him in this space. I like it. I mean, it's a bit of a novelty film in that regard, but I like that the filmmaker keeps it in-house and has set those limitations and plays with it to the nth degree. The only thing I really didn't wash with me about this film is the end. The end felt a bit too neat and abrupt, and I guess it's because...
You've got to end it.
And that's the frustrating thing. I think it's
but
because...
But you know what's good about the ending? I don't want to give away anything about the ending. The film's strength is it's completely ordinary. Like, I think it's been described as a one-man thriller in a car,
yep.
Which it is in many ways, but it's a completely ordinary life. I think they chose his accent because they wanted someone who was working class, but about whom there'd be no... preconceptions or stereotypes. He's got a broad sort of Welsh accent, I
yep.
think it is. And I like the ending. It's just normal life.
Yeah, for me it was a little too neat. I'm not a fan of neat endings, if you haven't gotten that impression over the last few years. It just felt...
It's in real life more like that than some...
Oh, I think real life's more ambiguous. I like ambiguity. You know, maybe it's just a product of the fact that the film is so tense. And it feels, because you're driving in one direction the entire way, that when it ends, it's going to be a little bit of a letdown to a degree. Maybe that's just a byproduct of the structure of the film.
But pretty good, isn't he?
He's very good. He's great in this. And I think, I'm glad I saw this on a big screen. I think you could probably wait until DVD, but I would recommend people see it at the cinema, just because the film relies so much on that. Claustrophobic space,
it's
that being that watching this in a cinema in the dark space where the whole sort of car envelops you, I think is far more effective.
Not quite Flight 93, you have to lie down in the
corner. No, it's not quite that, no.
But it's fairly impressive. Lock is the name of the film. Is it on wide release?
Actually, it's pretty limited. I think you'll find it at Cinema Nova, and that may be it, actually.
Okay.
Venture to Carlton.
Nothing wrong with Carlton, right? Can't be... Can take the boy out of Carlton. But still, look, I'm interested, though, in your nominations for single actor films. Buried with Ryan Reynolds would have to come close. We've mentioned Buried before, haven't we? That's the quite horrific film, isn't it?
Yeah, he's in a coffin.
Yeah,
he's a contractor in Iraq, and he doesn't know how he got in there or why he's in there. That's a film that is I think, shows the strengths of Ryan Reynolds' acting chops, which we don't often see. He's often cast in fairly sort of mundane, abs roles. But that's also a film that I think comes unstuck a little bit by having things like, the phone battery's running out, but then suddenly there's a snake in the coffin, and it's, okay, you didn't need
devices.
To do that, yeah.
Okay. Someone mentioning All Is Lost, the Robert Redford film, which I didn't see. That's the sailing film, isn't it?
And I really appreciate that film. Yeah, I really dug it.
That's from Lucas in Ringwood. You can give us a call if you've got a single actress film you reckon is worth a mention. 1300-222-774. It is a bit of a feat simply to carry that off. The Old Man and the Sea, Spencer Tracy, is signed off as just brilliant in one text. Eraserhead from Jane.
Here comes Lynch again.
Yeah, that's another traumatic film for me. Dual Telephone with Whoopi Goldberg?
Oh, The Telephone.
Oh, The
Maybe
Telephone.
That's two, Dual and The Telephone.
Oh, okay. What's The Telephone?
The Telephone it's got a bit of a cult status now. I saw it on VHS many years ago and hated it as a child and was fascinated by it and then revisited it recently. I think it's the only film that Rip Torn ever directed. And Whoopi Goldberg is a woman who comes back to her apartment, a New York apartment at the beginning of the film, and maybe going mad and keeps answering the telephone, but you're not sure if she's actually having a conversation with anyone or it's just a series of kind of
Sounds
crazy conversations that are in her head. Doesn't quite work, but I think I appreciate it more coming back to it as an adult. Well, arguably.
Look, Duel, quite a few of you nominating Duel with, it's Dennis Weaver, isn't it?
Yep.
As the single man, which I think, we definitely take that, even though there's the odd actor. There is quite literally, by the way, in Locke, there are no other actors on screen at all. You hear voices on the phone, but you do not see.
You do feel for some of those voices. I mean, it's kind of hard to do voice work well in that context as well, but the wife is fantastic. The woman who's about to give birth is great. But also, I think my favourite, non-appearing character in the film is the poor Irish guy who's the contractor who he lumps
voice,
with doing
he?
The concrete pour, who's drinking and on the job.
Biggest concrete pour in Europe. Yeah, totally. Quite a few of you are nominating Castaway with Tom Hanks. Not solely a one-man show, says Sue, but nevertheless worth a mention. I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Is he hands-free in Locke, is the text from Sue. Yes, absolutely he is.
Doesn't do a lot of steering, though. Did you notice that?
Yeah, I know. But it's well done. So he does a lot. He does a lot in the car. It's, anyway, look. And Adrian Brody in The Pianist. Yeah, kind of almost... There's a fair few other actors in The Pianist, though, isn't there?
I still haven't sat through that.
Oh, it's pretty...
Grueling. It's supposed to be Polanski's most personal film, from what I gather.
It's pretty hard to sit through.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can stand that. Look, 1300-222-774. It's like Schindler's List. which I saw twice. It's just hard work. Sometimes
there weren't people making out in the cinema like that Seinfeld episode, were there? Oh, that's I saw people making out when I saw Irreversible, so I don't know if you can ever top that. One of the most horrific films I'll ever see.
Clearly, they weren't watching. Look, it's 4:45 on 774 ABC Melbourne. We do film every Friday with Josh Nelson, talking about Lock, which is the Tom Hardy flick. If you've got a good single actor, single actress film, love to hear from you. Quite a few of you too mentioning Rear Window, one man, one woman, one villain. There you go. Yes, indeed. And also, apparently Tom Hardy was in the TV version of Wuthering Heights. Have you seen that?
No, but yeah, that rings a bell.
He'd be a good Heathcliff
I'm sure he'd have to be.
Yeah. Yes, he is. He plays the most amazing Heathcliff in Wuthering Heights in 2009, according to Rach, and then married his Kathy, Charlotte Riley. Oh, there you go. I didn't know that. And Silent Running, which I don't remember. Do you remember Silent Running?
Bruce Dern, yeah. There's a couple of other actors early on, but then it's just a man on his ship and his plants.
Okay.
It's great. It actually really holds up well.
It's 70s, Silent Running?
It is. The soundtrack has dated a little. I think the Joan Baez-style folksiness of it is a little clumsy now. But, yeah, it's really, really good sci-fi.
Tim's calling from Eastern Freeway. Hey, Tim.
Yeah, g'day, Raf. How are you?
Good.
The movie I watched, I don't know, but I think it's called Moon. And it only ever had that one guy on it, even though he was sort of cloned himself. And there was a screen section where he had his ex-girlfriend talking on the screen.
I think it's Sam Rockwell, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, yeah. That was a brilliant movie. And it's basically just him. And the only other character I remember in it was the other clone of him and the woman who had been his past, which they created sort of fictitious thing.
You're giving away too much, Tim. You're giving away too much. Although, mind you, I think Moon... someone just sent me a link today. There's a 14-hour sci-fi marathon tomorrow at the Rebadge Valhalla, Tim. So actually, Moon is one of those films.
A great film.
They've got Buckaroo Banzai.
Oh, wow.
The Matrix, the Fourth Dimension. Moon, a few of the others. So, yeah.
Directed by Duncan Jones, David Bowie's son.
That's right. No, Moon's a good one. And Veronica's called from Box Hill South. Hey, Veronica.
Oh, hello.
What's yours?
I liked Phone Booth with Colin Farrell.
Yes, I was thinking about that. There are a few different people in it, but it's quite an intense one-man performance.
It's mostly him in the phone booth responding.
Colin Farrell fan, Veronica?
Yes, good.
Me too. I like him. I like his work. We want to talk about Nicolas Cage film. We'll get back to more of your texts soon. People nominating Wrecked with Adrian Brody, which, again, I've seen. I think he's in a car accident. I think I remember that one, but I haven't seen it, but I remember it being mentioned.
On 774 ABC Melbourne, you're listening to Raphael Epstein.
Get back to more of your single actor flicks in just a moment. But Josh is going to tell you about the new Nicolas Cage film. What is it?
It's called Joe, and it's screening at the Australian Centre for the Moving Image just before it gets a DVD release in the coming weeks. We talked about Nicolas Cage last week, and I said that everyone had to, for their homework, go and see Bad Lieutenant, Port of New Orleans. I'm guessing that not that many people probably have.
I don't recommend anybody complete that.
We'll talk about Nicolas Cage's performance in just a moment. But Joe, it stars Nicolas Cage, but it's really about a young boy played by Ty Sheridan, who was in Mud and also The Tree of Life, who comes from a fairly tumultuous family. He has a violent alcoholic father, and you get the sense early on that he's just looking for a way out. And he befriends Joe, who runs a kind of a working crew where they go in, they kill off trees so the plantation owner can place sort of new trees. And sort of caught almost between his violent father and this sort of surrogate father he sees in Joe.
Okay, have a listen to the trailer.
Me and my dad just got into town. I was wondering if you'd give us a job.
I pay a day's pay for a day's work. And if we work till dinner and get rained out, I pay for the whole day. Does that sound fair enough?
Yes, sir.
I'm Joe. When I watch that boy, I see someone who's nothing like me.
What the hell you looking at?
Why do you stick around like this?
What's most important right now is me taking care of Dorothy and Mama. Kind of got a family problem right now.
Doesn't sound like a date movie, Josh.
Probably not.
No, right.
It's not the happy, uplifting comedy.
Okay.
Strangely enough, the director of this, David Gordon Green, is really eclectic, and he's made films like Pineapple Express and Your Highness 2. Well, Your Highness was a stoner fantasy film epic with Natalie Portman and Franco and all those kind of cronies. And Pineapple Express was a stoner buddy film with Franco and Seth Rogen and so on. This is very much a serious film in line with his earlier work. Films like Undertow, which starred Jamie Bell and was produced by Terrence Malick. one of the most striking things that's evident in this film is the performance of Nicolas Cage. I mean, he's kind of garnered this unfortunate reputation as a bit of a laughing stock now for his overacting and the fact he can't say no to films because of his massive tax debt. He's so nuanced in this and so restrained. It's kind of strange. It's a bit of a reminder of the Nicolas Cage we've sort of haven't really seen for the last 20 years. And it's wonderful because, a little bit like Locke, actually, he plays a man on the brink, a man with a dark past, and he's sort of torn between giving in to this violent impulses that he's sort of prone to and adopting this young guy as a surrogate son figure. And, you know, the film is really interesting in terms of the way it explores that relationship between fathers and sons in similar ways to how films like Sling Blade, if you can remember back to that Billy Bob Thornton film, and even Mud, which we talked about last year, which sort of was part of that reconnaissance. I'm not sure if this is going to be the Rickagesons. We've just coined it there, trademark it. But it's a nice change of pace. That interesting dynamic you get between, does a son follow in the footsteps of his father and repeat the cycle of violence? Or, you know, that other question of if he follows this surrogate father who has a violent past, can he even break that, or is he simply switching from one father figure to another?
Is it swamp noir, as things like The Paperboy get called?
It's more backwards. Well, it's not really noir in that sense. It's almost more like a Western because Gary, the young boy's family, are a sort of drifting figure. They've come into town and Joe is the sort of the protective figure. I mean, it's almost the inverse of Shane. You know how Shane comes into town and then adopts the son to save the family? It's almost like the inverse of that. But this is very much a contemporary Western style of film. Also in terms of not just the father-son dynamic, but the way in which the town is sort of unstable and, you know, it's a town in the deep south. It's sort of rusty and industrial and kind of falling apart and prone to kind of alcoholism. And there's sort of the cast of side characters that, are kind of indulging violence. And there's, there's the brothel on the outskirts of town that Cage goes to at one point in the film. I really dug this film and was quite surprised because it's such a strong film tonally. The direction and the writing is really great. And he's cast a lot of non-professional actors. So all of Cage's work crew, mostly predominantly African-American, were workers. And there's a kind of quality in the dialect and the dialogue that you get that doesn't feel like someone's trying to write for a working-class black man. Yeah, that you sometimes get that really patronizing sort of style.
It seems real.
Yeah, this is very authentic. And quite sad news, actually. The guy who plays Gary's father in this, the violent alcoholic, was himself a drifter and died shortly after the film was made. And his performance is really, it's really authentic because, you can tell he's sort of drawing on some life experience there.
Yeah, wow.
This is a film also that's probably worth seeing at the cinema. Okay. It's a really widescreen panoramic
type of
film.
It's only on Acme and then it's coming out on DVD, so you've got to rush.
Yeah, it's on at Acme till I think the second last week of September, so you've got a couple of weeks. But I think the big screens at Acme are well worth it for this film, Joe.
Now, neither of these films have passed the Bechdel test, which I wanted to mention. And before we get to the Bureau, the Bechdel test is essentially that a film, I think it applies to books as well, needs two female characters speaking for a significant length of time in a film. I think it just needs to be for 1 minute about a topic that is not a man. It's one way of looking at the lens, putting the lens on film. Both films have failed that test.
Well, the other criteria in that is the woman anything but a prostitute, a victim, a motivating force for the male hero's mission and all that sort of thing? Yeah, both of these films. Well, it's interesting because I think with Locke, while they're not in the film, the female characters are points of identification and sympathy.
Yeah,
and
they're not talking to each other about something that isn't.
We don't see them. There's no inter-female personal relationships in either of these films. In fact, in Joe, we unfortunately do have that situation where the very few female characters we have are prostitutes, or one is mute, in fact. So that's, for me, Joe is interesting in terms of gender because it doesn't pretend that it has female characters. It's not like it has a token scene where we see a mother or a sister.
Sure.
It's really exploring masculinity, and the females and the way they're presented in the film are presented in that context. So we see how Joe treats women, not necessarily condoning that, but providing a context for his character. And I think that's a really important distinction to make.
And I think you said last week that you didn't think the Bechdel test was always a good measure for that which it seeks to measure. Why did you say that?
I think the Bechdel test is important in drawing our attention to gender representation, but I think there's a lot of films that fail the Bechdel test which are actually really quite positive in terms of their depiction of women, but there's also films that pass it which aren't. So, you know, it is, I mean, you could say a film like Sex and the City passes the Bechdel test, although that's questionable, but whether that's a progressive depiction of femininity is,
I think, it's an interesting lens to put over every film.
And that's why I think it's an important thing to bring up. Yeah.
Look, 1300 222 774 is the phone number. The text is 0437 774 774. About the Nick Cage film, Joe, will it come out on Blu-ray too? I've got no idea. Probably.
Direct your inquiries to, I think it's Mad Men who are that one. Yeah. So yeah,
they probably usually do. Yeah. They usually do. Josh, thanks for coming in.
Pleasure.
Josh Nelson, you can check out his blog at filmology.com. It's spelt with a P-H.